This is The Pulse. I'm Mike and Scott, and you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our show today is about matchmaking, in a health and science kind of way, of course. When you're sick, you're feeling lousy, you go to the doctor's office, you want to be matched with a diagnosis, right? Imagine you go to see a cardiologist, you tell them that you have serious chest pain, you can't breathe, perhaps your arm is feeling numb, and the doctor says, "Okay, that sounds like a heart attack," without ever listening to your heart or hooking you up to machines to check things out. That sounds crazy, right? But one could argue that this is how diagnostics work in mental health. The framework used here is the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is published by the American Psychiatric Association. Here's an example. In the latest edition, number 5, the symptoms for major depressive disorder include insomnia, loss of energy and appetite, feeling worthless or hopeless, not a word about brain science or the genetics of depression.
What we need conceptually to make progress here is to rethink these disorders as brain disorders.
This is Thomas Insull, the longtime head of the National Institute of Mental Health. The agency is the most powerful funder of research in this field in the world. Insull set in motion a dramatic shift in categorizing and diagnosing illnesses. In April of 2013, he declared in a blog post that the DSM had a lack of validity. A lot of people read it as if the Pope had denounced the Bible. And then in September of last year,
Dr. Thomas Insull is moving from the government to Silicon Valley after 13 years as the director of the National Institute for Mental Health. It's not a job you might expect for a respected...
Insull was scooped up by Google, leaving behind an agency in transition with a lot of loose ends to tie up. We asked reporter Audrey Quinn to look into some of the challenges facing the agency, and she's going to do that in a 3-part series over the next few weeks. In today's first part, she explores what might replace the Bible of psychiatry.
Possibly the only thing more scary than public speaking is getting called out while you're public speaking. In the early 90s, Judith Ford was a neuroscientist at Stanford. She'd made her name in studying the aging brain, but she just recently shifted to schizophrenia research. She was presenting at a conference, a room full of strangers.
It was actually probably the first talk I had ever given at a conference on schizophrenia. And someone in the audience raised his hand, I think even stood up, and said, "How can you study schizophrenia? Schizophrenia is just a composite of a huge number of different kinds of symptoms, everything from hallucinations to delusions to thought disorder. How can you say anything about schizophrenia?" And I really had no idea how to answer that.
Ford says it was really pretty traumatic, but she went back to her lab and thought about what he said. She hadn't really been getting anywhere with her schizophrenia research, and by questioning the label of schizophrenia, he'd given her permission to move away from the DSM framework.
I decided that he was right. Schizophrenia is a real wastebasket of symptoms, and I should focus on one. So I decided instead of studying schizophrenia, I would study auditory hallucinations.
So this guy who was totally trolling you actually ended up helping you out.
Yes, very much, and I appreciate that. If only I could thank him.
Auditory hallucinations are sounds made by a person's own mind that the person believes are coming from somewhere else. They're one of the most common symptoms associated with a schizophrenia diagnosis.
There are certain times when I can actually hear my mother saying things like, you know, if you just get your hair off your face, you'd be such a pretty girl, Judy. I can almost really hear her voice, but I do not believe that it is my mother speaking. I know that it's coming from inside my brain.
What is it about your brain, do you think, that when you hear that, "Keep your hair off your face, Judy," you know that it's not real?
I think that it's because I have a mechanism. It's a way of tagging the experience as coming from self.
Ford wants to figure out what that mechanism is, because it seems to be weaker in people who have auditory hallucinations. She now heads a lab at UC San Francisco, where she uses electroencephalogram testing, EEG. She puts a cap full of electrodes on a person's head that picks up activity across the different regions of their brain and transmits that to a computer. This is all while she's having them do talking experiments.
They sit here like this and they go, ah, 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 ah.
She looks at their brain response, and she's found that in people who have auditory hallucinations, it's as if their brains don't really distinguish between their voice on tape and their voice when they're talking.
Basically, people with schizophrenia don't tag these experiences as coming from self as readily as healthy, normal people do.
She says this extends even into the experience of touch. Other researchers have found that some people with schizophrenia actually can tickle themselves. They're not discounting their own touch the way other people do. For a long time, this kind of brain research focused on a particular symptom didn't really mesh with the way the National Institute of Mental Health was handing out research funding. Bruce Cuthbert first came to the NIMH in 1998. He'd been studying mood disorders. He says pretty much all the Institute's research back then was based around DSM-designated syndromes, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, depression, each categorized by a framework of symptoms.
And there were really very simple-minded notions of diagnoses and how we measured outcomes. In fact, I was so frustrated generally with what I thought was the poor quality of the science that after I'd been here 7 years, I left.
He started his own lab at the University of Minnesota, but the Institute asked him back in 2009. Director Tom Insel was looking to change the way they directed research. The Institute had started to fear that by dividing up research by DSM categories, they were putting false limits on what people could study. Insel wanted a more science-based system for addressing mental illness.
He invited me to return to the Institute to lead this new effort that became called the Research Domain Criteria Project.
The project's called RDoC for short.
It calls for studying human patients who may have DSM disorders, but we look at the disorders in the context of these basic functions and how they are disrupted.
It helps to think of RDoC as basically a giant grid. Listed down the side, you have all the different functions that can be disrupted by mental illness, like memory, wakefulness, fear responses. And then along the top of the grid, you have all the different factors that could impact those functions. Genes, brain circuitry, behavior. The idea is to fill in the entire grid so we can have a research-based understanding of the different types of functions at every possible level. So when we talk about, say, anxiety, we know we're talking about something tied to a certain set of genes, a certain set of brain circuits and behaviors. Judith Ford, the auditory hallucination researcher, was at another conference just a few years ago when she ran into Bruce Cuthbert. He told her about the new RDoC system.
And we were standing out at one of those tall, now popular, like bar tables or something. And we were just standing there chatting, and he told me about this. And I said, oh, that's fantastic. I said, you know, this is how I think about it myself. And he said, I know, you know, because he knew what I was doing. And I said, yeah, this is great news.
She says it gave her a grid to plug in what she was already doing to a structure that had already been vetted by the NIMH. Not everyone's as enthusiastic. I talked to about half a dozen different psychiatry researchers. Most didn't want to go on record with their concerns about RDoC. But the phrase that kept coming up was, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Sure, they said, there's some flaws with the DSM system, but it gives us a common way to describe all the varieties of mental illnesses. But Cuthbert says that fear is mistaken. He's now the acting director of the NIMH, and he says they're not doing away with the DSM labels. They're even still funding research that follows the psychiatry Bible.
But that wide misunderstanding, I think, you know, caused a lot of consternation in the field, and we've been trying to clear up the messaging since then.
Yes, he says, the National Institute of Mental Health is saying that the RDoC system has better science than the DSM. But the RDoC system's not fully fleshed out yet. The grid it sets up still has a lot of holes in it. Figuring out how to more fully make that bridge from a system that's well-established, the DSM, to a system that's scientifically valid, the RDoC, that will be the job of the new director. For The Pulse, I'm Audrey Quinn.
Audrey Quinn is going to continue her series on the National Institute of Mental Health next week with a look at suicide prevention.